You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Our guest, our youngest guest that we've had in a long, long time, Stefanos Tsitsipas, number 32 from Greece, a young, up-and-coming, thriving player on the ATP Tour. He is in Washington, D.C. this week after a vacation, and before that, a fourth-round appearance at Wimbledon. Candidly, we'd never spoken before, but it was an absolute pleasure speaking with him. Think you'll enjoy this conversation. This is one of the young rising stars in the sport. He's up to 32 now and isn't defending a whole lot more, so this could very easily be a top 20 player by the fall. Good conversation, and I think you'll enjoy this. So here he is now. How are you?
I'm great. You?
Good, thanks. How how's it going? How's Washington D.C. treating you?
Well, yeah, it's fine. I'm had a couple of practice sessions here. I've been here like 3 days, so it's all right.
This is like our Athens. Have you do you get to do any sightseeing, or is it pretty much tennis in the hotel?
It's no, I didn't have that much time to go around the city. It's, as you said, it's mostly practice. You know, back to the hotel, so not that much of sightseeing.
We'll give you some tips.
I hope. Hopefully, I can have some. I can have some free time between my matches. I will be. You know, I would like to see the city, just visit, discover the city.
Very nice city, but don't lose early. Stay in the tournament as long as you can.
No, definitely.
So I looked it up a year ago this week. You were. You were playing a challenger in Slovenia.
Yeah.
You're now you're top 32. You'll be seated at the U.S. Open most likely. You've won a lot of matches. You've won a lot of money. What's this year been like for you?
Oh, it's been a roller coaster. many ups and downs, and I did have a decent start of the year, doing well in Doha, playing well, and reaching the quarterfinals. Then losing in the first round of the Australian Open, you know, I was not sure back then what the year is going to be like. So I kept working hard with my team. You know, I kept believing. I took some time off vacation, you know, bring my body back to normal, to 100%. Then I got back the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters, after having vacation in the British Virgin Islands. And I qualified. I won my first round match against another next gen player, Dennis. So, it was a pretty good tournament for me at Monte Carlo. Then I went on to the next week, Barcelona finals, which, to be honest with you, I really didn't expect. I was concentrated on my game more than doing well and doing good results, so I can say just came automatically, just switched, everything went my way at this tournament, and then it helped me raise confidence and believe in myself even more. So yeah, I kept working hard, and Roland Garros I was a bit, I can say, not unlucky, but you know, I had to face a very tough clay court player, Dominic Thiem, and then yeah, Wimbledon,
which is
my favorite tournament, and I always wanted to do well there, so it was just phenomenal to be in the fourth round of Grand Slam. It's something that I believe any kid dreams about.
And you hit the best shot of the tournament.
Yeah, that's right.
You know that, right?
I think it was the best shot. I'm not sure. I guess it was the best shot.
It was especially given we're going to post this when we post this podcast. We'll post the clip, but where this was in the match also. This was you didn't hit this in the first game when there was no pressure. We'll post the clip, but you went on another vacation, right? I saw your
yeah,
Instagram.
Yeah, about my vacation, you said, right?
Yeah, yeah. Then you took a week off, well deserved after Wimbledon. Where did
I took a week off. I went to a completely deserted island in BVI.
You like that BVI?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Do you?
I loved it there.
You windsurf?
No, I was just swimming the whole day at the beach by myself. Trying to, you know, balance myself, understand my feelings, understand myself a bit better, get to know myself. And it was actually the best 1 week of my life. As weird as it may sound, being alone was the best thing that has ever happened to me. I felt like I didn't belong to society anymore. I felt like I was on my own, doing whatever I wanted, and being completely away from everyone.
What'd you learn? Keep going with that. That's it. What'd you learn about yourself?
There.
But
what in the island?
No. What
did I learn about myself?
Yeah. What did you discover? What was part of this this emotional journey? What did you discover?
It may sound weird, but the relationship, like I got to understand how I feel, and I was at that given moment, like when I before going on vacation, I played Miami and Indian Wells. It's tough when you're with your dad all the time, and I obviously love my dad. It's he's a member of the family, and he's the only person that I trust and everything. But sometimes it's too much, you know, having a person next to you and having that many people, and how can I say it? You know the pressure of the game and everything.
Sure.
You don't feel like alive. Like you don't feel like yourself at all. So it just came. It was something that it was that I wanted to do for a very long time, and I have never had the opportunity to do so. I'm really grateful that I did this and kind of like settled down and got to, as I said, know myself a little bit better. I was, you know, to understand how I feel, how what I'm like alone, because I never had this feeling alone. I always was surrounded by people and by family members and by, I don't know, my team. So it's not easy, you know.
It's really interesting to hear you say that. I mean, some of this is you sound like a teenager that might want some distance. But, you know, a lot of times we hear about players who say, oh, I just needed a physical break. And as soon as
exactly.
the season was over, but it sounds like
that's
this is
what
almost,
I needed.
Yeah, but it sounds like this is spiritual.
A physical break on my own with no people around me.
And you feel you're 19 years old, but you feel refreshed. You feel like sounds like you feel very replenished coming back from vacation.
Yeah, I was very refreshed, and I felt like it was a new beginning for me, a new start. And after that, after this vacation, and I felt very confident. It's like I felt double the confidence that I had before, and I felt, as you said, fresh. I felt my body was, my body's battery was back at 100%.
I remember I was talking to Andy Roddick once, and he said, you know, he won the U.S. Open 15 years ago, and he reached Wimbledon final, played Roger Federer, but he said one of his favorite years on tour was the first time he went through the circuit and saw all these cities for the first time, and he saw the facilities. Where do you feel you are in your career right now? I mean, is it still, boy, I've never been to Washington, D.C., and what a neat event, or do you feel like you're a top 40 player who's locked into a job and defending points? I mean, where are you in your career right now as you see it?
I start feeling like a regular, to be honest. No, it's definitely, I'm definitely new to that, to this circuit. I'm young, and last year I didn't play that many ATP tournaments. I was, you know, mixing with challengers and ATPs. So I was not like 100% following the ATP World Tour circuit at the top. So now this year I have only played, I think I've played only one challenger this year, and the rest was only ATP events. So it's definitely nice. I feel like you know, slowly I'm getting in there, and I'm becoming a regular. I'm becoming someone who has been there for many years.
You
but
feel
for
like
me, for me, it's just the beginning. It's nice to be in DC. It's nice to play in a tournament that I didn't play last year, and it's like I'm always exploring new things that I didn't have the opportunity to play at tournaments that last year, for example, I was not here.
You feel like you belong.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about you. We do not often see players from Greece. Tennis was not one of the original Olympic sports. How did you come in? How did you come into the sport?
My parents were coaches in our local resort next to our house, and they were giving lessons to tourists and visitors that stayed at the hotel. And I was hanging around the courts the whole day. And at some point, I got the racket and start kidding with the kids that my dad used to coach, the kids of the, the people that came for vacation there. And I just, started playing with them, and slowly got more interesting for me. They signed me in our local tennis club, and after having regular tennis lessons, then I really liked the sports. I did play football and did light athletics at the same time. So I actually liked football a bit more than tennis. And then I won my first tournament at the age of eight, I think, in Normandy, in France. I went for some kids tournaments there for the summer, and I won one, my first tournament. And I was really happy of the accomplishment and the way it felt to win something on my own. So since that day, I said to my dad, I want to play tennis and not football.
So you're 8 years old and you win this tournament. What did your backhand?
I forgot that you call it soccer. Sorry.
No. But what did your? I want to ask about your backhand. When you were 8 years old, what did your backhand look like?
I used to play with two-handed backhand when I was 7 or 8, and then I switched at 8 years old to one-handed backhand. It was tough, first of all, because I didn't have that much power in my body, and all the kids they did play with two-handed backhand. I was the one of the few kids that played with the single-handed backhand, so I think it was was something good for me. I cannot imagine myself playing two-handed backhand. It was a very interesting shot for me when I was young, and I wanted to, I admired Roger Federer, so he was one of my main inspirations.
But that was your decision? There wasn't a coach who said...
Nope, that was 100% my decision.
You know, it looks much prettier, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Can you imagine me playing double hand backhand the way I play now?
I think you should try it at age 19. You mentioned Federer. I was thinking we don't hear a lot of Greek players, but we hear players with Greek surnames.
Yep.
Sampras and Philippoussis, one-handed backhands also. But Roger was the player you looked up to as a kid?
Yeah, Roger was he was just the way he played it was like reflecting on me, the way I played, and I always wanted to be like him, and I always watched his matches. I admired Rafael Nadal as well because of his fighting spirit and the energy he had on the court, but mostly Federer because it was the way he played. It was so beautiful and so looked so natural to me.
What's the state of tennis in Greece? I mean, we have a top 50 female player as well. What's the state of the sport in your country?
It's getting better. It's getting more popular than before, and people seem to like it a bit more than before. Yeah, as I said, it's getting more popular, and it's just I believe it's just if we make good results and good wins and get higher in the ranking and have more attention on the media and TV, then obviously the sport will grow even more. But as I said, it's growing, and I can see people going out playing tennis more, and the media is doing a pretty good work. So I think it can get even bigger in the future.
Are there facilities? I mean, there are courts and places to play?
Yeah, there are, yeah.
What about the Federer? I mean, there are no big events there, no. Which is how a lot of countries get, money to the Federation. How is the funding? I mean, how are you able to travel the world when you were a junior, especially?
At my current state,
well,
the help of the Federation is not anymore. I mean, it's not a big thing, but when I was younger, it was a struggle. But now it got better, and I can support myself, and thank God I have the Moratoglou Tennis Academy. They support me as well with my coaches and fitness coaches and everyone, and my practice whenever I'm there. So I feel blessed to have all those people around me that they provide for me, and I can trust them. But no, there is no support from the Federation, not at all.
You mentioned Patrick, another Greek name, Patrick Mouratoglou. Yep. What's your connection with his with him and his academy? Do you can stop in there as you like? What's your relationship with Patrick?
Yeah, I'm part of the team. Team Mouratoglou. It's a team of Popirin is in there, Alexi Popirin from Australia, and me, and they are helping us a lot, and we can be there whenever we want, whenever we like. They have the right coaches for us. They have the right team. And it's just everything seems to be so fluid when they're around. And it's a lifesaver to be part of the Mouratoglou Academy. They have taught me so much, and they have helped me so much. My relationship with Patrick is very good. And he has been a few of my matches, supporting me, giving me advices. He's a really good coach and nice person.
And tell me, you mentioned your father, who is who's your principal coach, and I looked him up. He's on the ATP website, so we can say he was a former pro. What's your relationship with him, and what's the we see a lot of parents and fathers coaching in women's tennis. You see it with Zverev, obviously, but we don't see that much in men's anymore. What's it like having your dad as a coach?
It's not easy. Definitely, it's not easy.
How's that?
But who else could have possibly had if it wasn't my dad? It would be so much more difficult to have someone else that I don't trust and I don't know that well. So having my dad is, it's the best thing I can have. Of course, we have fights sometimes, and the father-son relationship is not always at its best. But at the end of the day, I appreciate what he does for me, because not many fathers, dads would do for their son. And he also has a very good knowledge of the game, so he helps me a lot. He's the ultimate person next to me. He does everything for me.
And every 90 days, you can go to the BVI and just get away a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was having this debate with someone on two things. I'm curious where you stand. Young tennis player, what's more important, talent or ambition?
Ambition, definitely.
Why?
Because ambition, you know, beats talent. If you don't have ambition, then it's like you're zero. Like there's no sense of playing. But talent is you know something that comes from nature if you have it. But ambition, it's just much stronger than talent. Ambition, definitely.
Good answer.
I cannot explain it.
No,
I cannot explain
answer.
It that much.
Good.
But right. I believe that ambition is so much stronger than talent, and it just reflects better.
When do you think? So you turn 20 in a few weeks. So unfortunately, I don't think you will ever win a major as a teenager. I think you got to the fourth round in your last major as a teenager, which is a great achievement. But someone we were talking about, when do you think it will be that another teenager will win a major? Do you think we'll see that? Or are those days over?
To be honest with you, I think it's something really tough to achieve to win a Grand Slam as a teenager. It's just, to me, it's like impossible. But if it happens, then it will be a hell of a story, an amazing thing.
Why do you think that is? I mean, so everyone, you know, the sport is more physical and you need the leg strength or it's...
Tennis has evolved. It's not the same thing as it used to be 10, 20 years ago. You know, taller players with bigger serves, shorter rallies, unfortunately, and the game is becoming faster. Players, you know, have better physical than before, and the mental part in the game has, you know, changed as well, and the game is played differently than it was used to be played before. So it's I think it's common in sports. It's in every single sport there's a, you know,
yeah, it's a sport of
changes,
evolves, so. Right.
As Rafa said in one interview, I saw an interview that Rafa gave. I don't remember to which, but never mind. He said that tennis changing in a couple of years with you know, big servers and short rallies, and it can turn out to be a boring sport. I hope it's not, but I hope everything, all these things that he said won't happen. But I mean, you never know.
That's where you and your one-handed backhand come in.
I'm really sorry because I need to go, and my dad told me we need to go for practice.
Very good. All right, you have a tournament to get to, but it was a pleasure talking to you.
Go.
No worries. It was a pleasure. Eferisto, and good luck. We'll look forward
to
seeing you in New York.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care. All right, there goes Stefanos Tsitsipas. We thank him for spending some time with us. I don't know if you caught that. His father in the background said, time to practice, son, which gets into a bit of the father-son dynamic that he had spoken about. But I really enjoyed that. Jamie Lasanti, you, our esteemed producer, you were listening to that conversation. What struck you?
He's great. He's really he was really engaging. I mean, I don't know if it was he was gearing up for practice, but he was really into it. I liked how he shed some light on the fact that he's coached by his father and he doesn't really get so much time alone, and he kind of had this discovery period for himself.
He's 19 years old. He's a teenager traveling with dad. You know, most of us would probably react similarly.
Exactly. So yeah, that was really cool.
Have you seen him play?
Yeah. I mean, that shot in Wimbledon, like we said, we'll link it. But incredible, you know, and he's been really exciting. He's gone from first round in Australia to second round at the French, fourth round at Wimbledon. So
trending in the right direction.
Exactly.
No, I think there's a lot to like here on any number of levels. I candidly had not spoken to him before. I thought, especially for 19 years old, that was well played. And I thought it was interesting, too. We always hear about players who take vacation and they send their Instagram photos and, you know, women as well, as soon as the season's over. But usually it's, they talk about it in physical terms, and I had to give my body a break, and I did nothing. I thought a 19-year-old who's taken two spiritual breaks to best week of my life, he said, to sort of learn a little bit more about himself. I thought that was very, very mature. But definitely one of the up-and-coming players. I thought it was interesting, too, what he said about teenagers breaking through. And I think we always talk often about this trend of the aging field and players deep into their 30s, and all four Wimbledon finalists this year were north of 30. Interesting to hear the 19-year-old perspective. And I think it's healthy. I mean, I think it's healthy for the sport. I think it's healthy for the player. You don't come saddled with expectation. If you're 19 years old and you're sort of thinking to yourself, the days of teenagers winning majors are that's a thing of the past. I need to build this slowly.
You think that's a good thing?
I think that's a good thing. Yeah. I think, I mean, it's funny, too. You go back and we're talking about, 20, 25 years ago. So it's not prehistoric, but it's also not loud. But, Andre Agassi was this colossal disappointment until he broke through. How old was he? He'd barely turned 22. I mean, Nick Kyrgios is older than Andre Agassi was when he won his first major. And I think it's healthy for these players not to come out with wild expectations, and they can go in. You heard him talk. He's fourth round of Wimbledon. He's thrilled. That's a career result for him, and it's a sign that things are on the right track. You don't get the feeling he went in thinking he was going to leave with the trophy, and it's disappointed he only won three matches. So
part of that, though, I think is like we as like the tennis community should probably switch our discussion a little bit to not peg these young players all of a sudden as soon as they have that first breakthrough as, oh my God, they're going to win majors. I think starting to switch the conversation and discussion to say these people are showing really good potential and they're really young, and we can say, look out for them. These are the next gen. These are the, but let's be real about the expectation there, and they're not going to win majors. I think that's kind of plays into everything, because sometimes, you think of like a Cece Bellis, winning, and all of a sudden she's like, she wins at the U.S. Open and she goes really far, and she's a teenager and she gets all the headlines and everyone's like, oh my gosh, everyone wants to peg her as like the next big thing. And That's not necessarily the case. So I think it's fair.
It's healthy.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the other thing I would have spoken to him more about is just the role of funding. And I think sometimes we forget this. If you're not independently wealthy and you don't come from a country where there's a federation that's willing to invest. I mean, a lot of these players go to Kazakhstan because there's a federation with money. How do you travel to these events? How do you have a competitive career when you've got to pay for own travel and coaching? And I think that's something that he deserves a lot of credit for overcoming. Same, I didn't mention her by name, but Maria Sakkari is the Greek player on the women's side who's in the top 50. Again, I think sometimes we probably overlook that there's a huge financial element to this, and American players have the good fortune. A lot of the events are here. The USTA runs a major, which spits off, tens of millions of dollars in funding. If you're from a country like Greece, where there is not a tournament to speak of, I mean, maybe a little Davis Cup revenue here and there, but for him to be 19 years old and a top 32 player is really impressive.
Which is probably why he is so grateful for his father and the role he's played. Because like he said, I mean, basically, like, who else is going to coach me if it wasn't him?
Right.
So I think that's an important relationship that, like, as you said, you have Zverev, but there's not many other examples of that, because most people do have a federation or support where they have a stream of coaches that they can tap into. So no different thing.
Interesting you mentioned Zverev, who also has a father, two parents who were former players. And they have the same agent. They also have siblings at play in the case of Stefanos. It's a younger sibling, but there's some symmetry there. All right, any other, real quick, I was off last week, so we didn't really talk much U.S. hardcourts. Give me two storylines you're going to be following between now and the U.S. Open.
I'm excited to see how Serena kind of just plays her way through. She's entered in a lot of
events. I was
going to
say, let us say that we are recording this on Tuesday morning. That was because of Stefanos's match schedule in D.C. So Serena's playing as of right now anyway.
I think she is
in San Jose, California as we report this. And whether this is a bid to get up her ranking or match play, Serena could have a fairly active summer here. So that's good to see.
That's one.
What else I got?
I think Novak Djokovic is the other one. Last time we kind of talked and did our Wimbledon wrap, we were really interested to see what happens next with him. I mean, he kind of surprised us in Wimbledon, but he's back on track and kind of back in the game. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares in the fall and going into the U.S. Open, how he kind of responds after winning a major.
Yes, people said, is Djokovic the favorite at the U.S. Open now? And I said, you know, I think we got to see how these summer, I think these summer events suddenly become very interesting.
Yeah,
Roger
has
pulled out of Canada, which is not a huge surprise, a bit of a disappointment. I suspect next year he plays Montreal, which is, and perhaps alternates. I mean, I think this is what you do when you try to prolong a career. But Rafael Nadal is a defending U.S. Open champion. We forget about Novak Djokovic. Pretty nice hard court resume he's amassed through the years, and suddenly he comes in. So I think these summer events are going to have some real predictive value. I think it's too early to say who's going to win the U.S. Open because we've got a number of different scenarios.
What about you? Storylines, too?
I think the women's... I mean, I've loved women's tennis. I always love women's tennis. But this year in particular, I've loved the women's game this year. And I think Sloane Stephens is an interesting player to watch always. Azarenka is still someone who I'm keeping an eye on. I don't know how much, you know, if Maria Sharapova has a lousy U.S. Open, what is the status of her career? I mean, I think there are a lot of storylines, but I think you're right. I mean, I think Serena is always going to be the driving narrative. And no, on the men, things, the plot in some ways got very, very interesting after Wimbledon. At the same time, we are still in big three land. I mean, it has still been a long, long time since a player not named Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. It's been 2 years, in fact. And then sort of the sub-storylines, Andy Murray, Stan Wawrinka, Nick Kyrgios just by default is always someone who's interesting. And then I think, you know, I'd put,
kids.
Them kids. Someone's got to fill the void here. Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Djokovic, they're not going to play forever. They're still going to hold tournaments. Who's going to win them? All right, that was, I enjoyed that. That was a good conversation. Again, I'd never spoken to him before. I was really impressed by that. You know, not always, not every 19-year-old is that outspoken at that poise, especially in his second language. So anyway, Jamie, thank you as always. Pleasure.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thanks. We will do it again next week. If people were so inclined, where might they pick up this podcast, Jamie?
They can go on Apple Podcasts and subscribe, leave a review. I haven't checked our reviews in a while, so I think I should do that. But please leave them, and I'll read them this week. And that's it.
Keep the guest suggestions coming as well. There were some good ones, including this one, and I thought it worked out well. So, all right, have a good week, everyone. We will do it again in 7 days.